I'm meteorologist Amanda Tebow, Local 22, Local 44 News.
It's 71 degrees at 101.3 ESPN.
Sports and sports talk for the Champlain Valley. WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh, 101.3 ESPN.
The Red Sox have their first losing streak of 2018, and they won't play today, so they can try to get back on track. Sox will open up a series with the Blue Jays tomorrow. As for tonight's sporting events around the New England area, well, the Boston Bruins, they look to close out the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight in Game 6. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30 right here on 101.3 ESPN. The Patriots, we are finally in NFL draft week. Ian Rappaport, NFL insider for the NFL Network, says the Pats had a private workout with Lamar Jackson. It's been underreported, but we have heard about the Pats' interest in the former Heisman Trophy winner. Could the Giants be on the verge of trading a former first-round pick? Well, Jordan Ronan of ESPN says the G-men would look to trade offensive lineman Eric Flowers, who was underwhelmed in his time in New York, although NFL executives aren't sure the G-men would even be able to move Flowers. More on the Pats. Are people upset around Rob Gronkowski's antics over the weekend at Gillette Stadium? We'll get into that in the huddle and Champlain Valley game night. This SportsCenter update brought to you by the Food Science Corporation. They are hiring machine operators in Williston. Great pay and benefits. Apply online. FoodScienceCorp.com. You're in the huddle on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and we're always streaming. So take us anywhere, the 101.3 ESPN app.
The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. All accounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Get those shades on, baby. I'm in shorts for the next 6 months.
You are.
Look at that. Look at those unhairy legs.
It's actually making my earwax crack right now because I'm looking at your legs like
those
that.
Those are the whitest legs in Vermont, and that's saying something.
Why don't you have hair on your legs?
Long story. I lost a bet 30 years ago. Had to serve my boss breakfast at Nectar's. And my then girlfriend, future wife, now ex-wife, decided she'd shave my legs because I had to wear a French maid's costume to serve him breakfast at Nectar's.
So you can't grow hair? I thought you would grow the hair back.
No, it never. Trust me.
Grew back.
Look at it. I have completely bald legs. Is that ridiculous?
So you shaved your legs.
She shaved them, yeah.
That's romantic. That sounds
fun. It was. Well, I ended up marrying her. So.
And that's the moment that
you
fell in love.
Are you sure?
That was the moment I knew she was the one.
Would you use like a rusty blade or something like that?
No, I'd always like to tell people that I like to remain aerodynamic for my marathons, but that isn't
That's
really
not
the
true.
Case.
So you didn't even get them waxed? She got, like shaving cream?
Yeah, she just
Barbasol?
Shaved them right in the radio station office
and,
that morning.
And they never grew back?
Never grew back. There isn't a hair on either of my legs.
Remember the Seinfeld where Jerry shaved his chest, but it grew back thicker and darker?
I didn't see that one.
Isn't that what's supposed to happen?
I don't know. I mean, I have no idea.
Or is that an old wives' tale?
I got hair in all
places. No, it is. That's
I
supposed to be true.
57, like my head, but my legs, I have no hair at all.
I thought once you shaved someplace, it grew back thicker and darker.
There's stuff really wrong with you. I've noticed over the last couple of years.
Are you just figuring this out now?
Well, I didn't know that. I thought you just shave your legs, but then I'm saying to myself, come on, this guy's going to take the time to shave his legs like every 3 days? No. Get out of here.
No, I'm a physical oddity.
My wife has more hair on her legs than you.
Oh, gross. Stop. Don't insult your wife like that.
Wow. But yours is like baby smooth.
Yeah, there's nothing. Look at that. That's why I say wear the sunglasses.
What's smoother, Arnie's face or Rich's legs?
Yeah, my face is pretty smooth today. I use the shave oil. Hey, real quick, because I'm debating if I should do this because you just right before we went on the air, you gave me a thought. There was a story coming out that there was a TV anchor person that stole a jacket.
Yeah.
Let me give you exactly a Bay Area reporter who covers the Warriors, has been caught on tape taking a security guard's jacket after a team practice last week in San Antonio.
Why?
Mike Schumann, a sports anchor of KGO TV in San Francisco, visible on tape, which ESPN has reviewed. Schumann appears to take a jacket belonging to Ralph Walker, a Warriors director of team security, as he walks out of the AT&T Center.
What? Why?
I don't know.
What's the purpose of owning that?
Well, you know the guy that once, you know, the guy that stole the Tom Brady jersey. Remember when he was covering the Super Bowl and all that?
That's worth something. What's this worth?
I was thinking, what is the best thing you ever stole? And I mean, not like a car or anything like that. To me, it's real easy. I once stole the Bob's Big Boy statue. You know what I'm talking about? The Bob's Big Boy statue.
You stole that?
Yeah, the big one. The full size. Put it in the back of a pickup.
Why?
Was the best. I don't know. For no reason. I'm sure alcohol had something to do with
it. It's like those crazy women who stole the Lunig's guy, Bob, at the front door out of the airport.
And takes it back on the... Did you hear about that, Brady?
No.
Tell him, Rich.
These two crazy women flew into Burlington. Yes. There's a picture of Bob
who
greets everyone at Lunig's.
About a month ago.
Yeah, and he greets everyone at Lunig's. He's a legend on Church Street.
There's like a cardboard cutout at the airport. Yes.
So these two women flew in and took it with them. Just walked right out with this huge picture of him.
There was a picture of them on the news going through the airport with the cardboard cutout.
And they found out that this was a bad thing to do. Duh. And they sent $350 to Lunig's. But so not the cardboard cutout.
Yeah, so they kept it and then attempted to pay
it. I think they were offering a free dessert for anybody that had any information on them. So I'm serious about that. So I'm just, what is the coolest thing you ever stole? I mean, and like I said, not a car or anything, or a wallet or, you know, stuff like
that. A woman's heart?
Oh, man.
How's that?
I just get a feeling our listeners have been very
colorful
over their years. I'm just saying something like that.
I'm trying to think what I stole. Probably an album.
An app? That's not even fun. What do you mean an album?
Well, you know what I used to do? I used to take the label would say $4.99 because it would have a cut in the record,
right?
And the jacket of the record, and it was supposed to be $8.99. I'd take the $4.99 sticker off and put it on the $8.99. So that's the worst thing I ever did.
I'm a goody two shoes.
The
only thing, the only things anyone I was ever around ever stole were coasters and glasses and bars. Those got taken frequently, and I once lost a laundry loop for my Oswego State baseball uniform. You had to return that at the end of the year.
Right.
I lost mine. Mine was number 7. I went into my teammate's locker room, or I was 17, and my teammate had number 7, and I stole his and wrote a 1 on it.
Oh,
so
yeah,
he got charged
you
rather
told
than
me.
Me.
Yeah, you told me about that.
That's about the only thing I did, and I felt bad, and I ended up paying it back.
Real? Am I the only, now you make me feel like I'm a bad person. I feel like I'm a bad person. I'm the only one that has stolen something fun.
Somebody stole my leg hair, apparently.
Well, I guess that's true. I guess, if you're a listener, Tom for a Tire text line 802-655-6672. You'll remain anonymous. So we've changed the names to protect the guilty. So there you go there. Because I thought there'd be somebody say, have you guys never stole a golf cart?
No.
You guys have never stole a golf cart?
To use on the course? He means taking it
you. No, take it off, you're staying at a resort hotel and you just take a golf cart and go joyriding or something?
Or use it on Jackass where they just crash into things.
Yes! How do you, or running into the sand pit?
Your fraternity humor is way above me.
Have you not?
Frat boys are the ones who do that stuff.
Well, in the fraternity, we went to the med center and stole
farts have all these stories. Yeah. And the kid has nothing.
I don't know. When I was at University of Arizona, we went into the med center. I would steal stethoscopes and jackets, I was a doctor, and walk around the hospital and pretend I was a doctor. But that was more fun than anything else.
Somebody says, I stole keys from the janitor in 8th grade. I got elevator rides all year.
Now that's cool.
Nice. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that.
That's thinking ahead.
That is thinking. I love that. That is awesome. So
no, you'd think I'd have something.
Yeah, you're the crazy guy.
I stole all the toilet paper in every dorm at Lyndon State College and wrapped it around my residence hall on a Friday night. So there.
That's not even funny.
Really bad. I expected a lot of people to have some potential inconvenient situations because of my actions.
Cody once stole a tractor with some buddies at a party and drove it around town. Just drove it around. See, something like that's kind of fun. I can't believe nobody's stolen golf carts. I mean, that's probably the number one theft in America.
But the toilet paper story is pretty good. That's my epic crime of the century.
First time I TP'd somebody's house, I didn't know what I was doing, so I threw a 4-pack of TP still in the plastic. Somebody must have thought, here's some free toilet paper. Here you go. Here's a for me. Brady, what do we got coming up on the show today?
Plenty coming up today. Remember this week, though, tomorrow, Trivia Burger Bar in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30, half-price apps and drink specials. Wednesday, we're broadcasting live from the UPS store for Carmichael Street in Essex over near the movie theater. And Arnie, you're going to be with us this week,
yes,
but you're
I
not
going
to be with us.
I am going to Los Angeles, so I'll take Wednesday off while you guys are on remote, and I'll view the show for the next 2 weeks in L.A. I'm bringing the whatever you guys call it.
The access.
And we'll see if I'm going to be able to put this thing together and go out to Los Angeles and for 2 weeks try to do the show with you guys. It should be quite the experience.
This could be quite an adventure, trying to do something technical.
So my ears are still going to hurt because we're still going to be talking to you.
I'm going to do it from the beach in my new Speedo, so I'm very excited about that.
You wouldn't know how to use the internet at the beach.
I know, but what the hell?
Remember, Mistake of the Day is still up for grabs. Michelle and Underhill was our winner last week. Mistake of the Day brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. If you give us the best mistake of the week, then you end up with that brand new baseball cap. Great show today. Did Alex Cora make his first bad move in Boston? Bob Soucy, the voice of the Patriots, the new voice of the Patriots, joins us at 4:35. Dale Murphy, 18-year Major League veteran, two-time MVP, 5 o'clock. Monday Mirage is at 5:20.
Wow.
But first, we've got a series now. The Celtics and the Bucks now tied at 2. And that was a tough one yesterday if you are a Celtic fan. And here is how it
Maker
sounded.
At the high post. Hand back to Brogdon. Dribble penetration. To the rim. The floater is no good. Tipped up and in. Giannis tips it. 104-102. Bucks lead. 5 seconds to go in the game.
And that's how it ended.
Well,
Celtics had a look.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
They had a good look.
Yes.
But they missed it. Now we're 2-2 headed back to Boston.
That was a fantastic tip. I mean, he was right directly under the rim. He got his hand up there.
Yeah.
I don't know who calculates this, but the probability, according to Second Spectrum, whatever the heck that is, Giannis Antetokounmpo had a 9% chance of grabbing that rebound. Jaylen Brown had a 35% chance. Jason Tatum, 33%. And Thon Maker, 10%. And somehow Giannis gets it and tips it in.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I don't know how you get that.
Second Spectrum?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Is this a group
of
kids with absolutely nothing to do?
No, they are being used by ESPN Stats and Info.
I love that.
He had
a
9% chance of getting that rebound.
How?
He gets the board and tips it in.
How does he have a... Is it based on where he's standing on the court? Is it
where he's standing? The
man in front of
other
him, maybe.
People
I
near
don't
him.
Know. Yeah.
I mean, Tatum and Brown are right there.
Right, but the missed shot landed right on his fingertips.
Because
he was directly under the rim. He had to reach his hand up. It came out of like virtually nowhere. That's why I said it was a phenomenal tip. It really was. I give him all the credit in the world for
that. Well, Morris was the guy I thought was going to get the rebound, but he was busy trying to stop Antetokounmpo's shot. Brogdon's shot. So he was in midair by the time that tip-in went in, and he was the real, as far as the left side of the rim, I thought he was the guy that was going to keep Giannis out of there.
You know, you guys laughed at me when you said, is it a must-win situation? Or what? Last week when we talked about game number 3, who needs it more? I was saying, let me tell you something. The Celtics need this game because next thing you know, they lose this. They lose game 4. It's back 2-2.
Right.
You got to put an end to this. You got to take game 3. Put your foot on the... And it turns out I was right. They lost game 3. Now they lost game 4. Series tied 2-2. That's why game 3 was more important. Who is it more important
part,
to? Milwaukee or Boston?
What part of this were you right about? Although you did say the same thing.
What did you say?
You said Boston in 7?
I said Boston in 7. But
yeah, me too.
I said that game 3 was more important to the Celtics to finish it off. Than really for Milwaukee to try to get back in this series. Look, now it's 2 games apiece. It's anybody's right now, and Milwaukee's got all the momentum.
But didn't you know the Bucks? We said it Friday. They're going to come out with their hair on fire, and they did.
In the same way that I presume the 3-0 pitch is always a piped fastball down the middle for a strike,
right. Yeah.
I presume that the team down 2-0 is going to win in Game 3. Am I concerned about the Celtics? Yes, but if am I going to sit here and say that I'm ultra concerned about them? No, the series doesn't start until the road team wins a game, and so far both teams have done exactly what they're supposed to do, one at home. If the Celtics lost in game five, then I would say yes, now the sky is falling. For right now, I'm like, look, I hate the idea of a two-game losing streak at any point, and I hate losing two in a row to a team that I feel I'm better than, but I still have a chance to hold serve at home and go back up 3-2, so no, I'm not overly concerned.
And look, this is a 2-7 only on paper. I mean, it says 2-7, but let's face it, this isn't. And we're going to take, as Celtics fans, whatever we can get out of the Boston Celtics at this point. I'd love to see them get to the second round, but do you really believe they're going to get past that? I mean, we'll just take whatever they give us at this point.
With the way Cleveland has been struggling, and look what's been going on in that series, Philadelphia's lost a game.
Toronto, Washington are 2-2.
It's wide open to anybody. I don't even care about injuries or anything like that at this point. It's too late to cry about Kyrie Irving and Hayward and all those guys. Whatever you got, it's next guy up now. Forget about all that.
I think ultimately I don't believe this team could go and beat Philadelphia, which is who they would be matched up against
Probably not in the second round.
But that still doesn't excuse the fact that I want to get to Philadelphia
and
see what happens. But it's not a good look to lose two games in a row. That's not a good look to anybody in the playoffs. No team would sit here and say, I'm happy to have lost two games in a row. But they haven't lost at home. They played great in the second half yesterday. I anticipate Milwaukee winning at least one, if not both, of their own home games. And we all said this thing was going 6 or 7. Now, we all had the Celtics winning, but as of right now, the Celtics are still on track to win in 6 or 7, like everybody said.
By the way, what do you think at the end of the game? Celtics had a 1-point lead? And then they got the ball. Who was coming in for the shot? It was stripped. He was fouled.
Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown was fouled. Was it a 1-point lead at that time? I'm not sure if it was 1 or 2. I know they had the lead. There was like 33 seconds left, so they couldn't run out the clock, but they certainly would have probably been fouled. At least I think they would have been fouled. And he gets fouled. They don't call it. The ball gets stolen. And next thing you know, they come back down and they hit the shot.
Yeah, and so Brad Stevens addressed that after the game.
Oh, he did? Okay, yeah.
I'm all for attacking up the court. There's so many possessions still left. There were 5 possessions left in that game anyways. Just didn't go our way, you know, and I think that's sometimes is the way you play. I want our guys to play free. I want our guys to attack. And if you have that mentality inside a minute, I think that's a good thing.
For the most part, I can kind of agree with them, but when they're coming to foul you, you have a 1-point lead. You got to let them foul you so you can go to the foul line and also chew up some time.
Have fouled them guaranteed? Do you know that?
No, I don't, but I thought at that point they were. I think there was 33 seconds left. The last thing they were going to do is what, play defense, let it get down to 8 or 9? I'm not sure. Maybe they would have done that.
Well, Tatum hit a long jumper, and then Brogdon was the guy with 33 seconds left that hit the 3. And then Horford had the 2 foul shots with 29 seconds left
that tied
the game.
That tied it up, so it was tied up. Oh, no, they were winning at the point.
So this is inside a minute to play.
Yeah, this
might have been before all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the play at the top of my head.
Yeah, there was so many. It was so much back and forth that last
minute.
I'm
not going to harp on one play. Obviously, you know, it's 2-2, and you're going to move on that. But that was a key part of the game.
Well, the fact that they, you know, and obviously in a best-of-7 series of any sort, there's no such thing as moral victories. But when you're down 65-45... on the road against a pretty good team, the crowd's going crazy. And to come back and actually take the lead at one point of that game, not too shabby.
20.
And I'm not overly interested in moral victories, as you said, and I'm not overly interested in the narrative of, at this point of the year, of calling everybody a rookie at this point. But it is fascinating, some of the numbers coming out of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. So Brown had 34 points yesterday. He becomes the first player 21 or younger with multiple 30-point games in a series since Derrick Rose did it in 2010.
Yeah. And he only had one all year.
Yeah, and Brown combined to score 55 points. That's the second most combined points in a playoff game by a pair of teammates under 22, which was Westbrook and Durant, who had 56.
All right, people are calling, people are texting all over the place. By the way, I'm not going to give the name, says this is an anonymous. That's easy for me to say.
Anonymous.
Borrowed a golf cart at a deployed location. Our first time allowed drinking. So,
All right.
You got that going for you. All right, Brady, what is coming up next?
Coming up next, Alex Cora. Did he make his first big blunder as manager of the Red Sox?
All right, we'll get to that next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and Wingo.
Coming up Tuesday, a deeper dive into the NFL draft. Who needs what and where, plus the quarterback whisperer. Bruce Arians joins us.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 10, only on 101.3 ESPN. And you thought the ESPN network hosts were opinionated.
Unsupportable opinion.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. You know, my dog bit me today. Nipped at me, in the nose.
Bit you in the nose?
Nipped at me.
It could only help.
Yeah, just a little.
Where? I don't see anything.
Right there, I was bleeding.
That's quite a target for your dog.
I know. I don't know. It was kissing me 1 second, and then it was sleeping. Well, and I think I went to give it a kiss, and it just went, it didn't. I startled it, went, arr! Got me in the nose.
Look at you.
That's called a play bite.
No, he got me. I was bleeding.
Well, you're just pretty weak then.
No, I was gushing blood. I'm wondering if
gushing. This is getting embellished as we go along.
No, I'm thinking the dog doesn't like me. I've said it before. I think the dog wants to take a pizza out of me. I'm not kidding.
Well, maybe you should take it out rather than let it go to the bathroom.
Doesn't have to bite me though. Jeez, it's like the second time that's happened.
What if you wouldn't let me out on a day like this?
I think the part pit bull's coming out. What's going on with the Red Sox? By the way, I got a big problem with that no hitter.
Yeah,
I got a problem with the no-hitter.
A lot of people do.
Well, I think it shouldn't be a no-hitter.
Because of which play?
The hit in the sixth.
The Benintendi play?
Yeah, the Benintendi
play. If you go out of the baseline, you're out. Now, you never see it called.
Right.
I'm with you there. You never see it called. But if you go out of the baseline, you are out.
Well,
that is a rule. A
couple things on that. One, it's not exactly to the line. So I think they give you a little bit of leeway with a couple of inches, too. They called him safe. And the play isn't reviewable. They didn't review it. But they called them safe, and if the play's not reviewable and they didn't review it, then what the hell's going on? Yeah. All of a sudden, they gathered up, and another umpire said, no. He stepped out?
Now, you are allowed to ask for help. That is part of what the umpires can do.
I think that's baloney. I think they're like, we can't give him a hit on something like that. They've got to earn it.
There was a couple of strange umpire-involved plays in that Oakland series. There was the one Friday night where the ball looked like it might have been a home run. Was it the Friday game where the Oakland hit what looked like it might be a home run?
Yep.
And the guy says, I don't know, I didn't see it. So they went to a review on it.
Tristan Wilson said that's the first time somebody had no hitter in history, which the pitcher gave up two hits. I had a problem with that, Brady. Yeah. First of all, you're the baseball guy. You're telling me that second line on the right side it's like a baseline on the NBA where if you step on it exactly, or they give you a little leeway on that.
You're allowed to run outside of that when you're turning for a hit. You know, a guy goes to take a double, you're going to round the bag. Look, I don't think that it's that egregious of a play, okay? I don't think Benintendi's that far out of bounds.
Right.
I don't think it's that bad.
So it's not exactly the letter to the law, I guess, is what you're telling me.
And it just
never
gets called.
Yes, it never gets called.
I mean, that's what bothered me about it.
And he was trying to avoid the tag. Generally, when people are trying to avoid the tag, you give them a little bit of leeway. But that said, it is the rule. You can't go out of the baseline.
But they said you can do it if you're sliding into the bag or going to the bag is the rule. I think, yeah, that's what they said.
Go out of the baseline sliding?
Well, yeah, that's what they said.
Well, he's not at that point. He's not, you know, he's not going directly for the bag at that point. He's like a little more than halfway down the line at that point. So I get it, but
yeah,
you never see it called. But and I bet you the no hitter played into it. I bet that all of that.
What was that? The sixth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I bet it played into it.
It was getting there,
but it is a rule. You cannot go more than 3 feet outside the bag, and he did.
I thought they were going to overturn it. But anyway, let's get to the other game.
Well, no, I was just going to say, that being said, what did you think about the no-hitter? This is going to be surprising, probably. I thought it was cool. I mean, I was riveted to it from the eighth inning on. I'm always aware of no-hitters once you start getting past the sixth inning or even the fifth inning in my case.
I'm not a Red Sox fan, right. So I think history is cool. I think no-hitters are cool. And there was a fascinating story on ESPN today by Sam Miller about how rare nine-inning complete game no-hitters are going to become. As hitters see more pitches per plate appearances, as strikeouts go up and more pitches are required to get through a game, and as pitchers routinely go less and less deep into games, getting a guy to throw a complete game no-hitter, right. nine innings himself, that's going to become increasingly rare.
Yeah. Right.
And plus the fact that the game was 3-0. I mean, and, you know, the game was, it wasn't like it was, if it was 1-0, I'd be like, come on, guys, get a base runner. Let's win this thing. But it was 3-0 at the time. And once it got to the ninth inning, I was kind of like, yeah, this is kind of cool. It's all right. I think it helps that my team at the at that point was 17-2. It's kind of hard to get mad at the Red Sox right now.
Yeah, I just didn't know if it was like, and I, as I said before, when you step on that line, right. it's not like the baseline in the NBA or the out of bounds in the NFL.
Yeah.
You don't go, oh, it is toe touch the line. That's not the case here, right?
I was listening to the game on this radio station, so I didn't happen to see
it. Well, his foot stepped outside the line, but again, we're not talking about it. You know, something that's like in the NFL or in the NBA. That's not the rule there. So, and they said you could do that if you're going around the base or you're sliding into the base.
Well, what were the odds of the Red Sox giving up a no-hitter? I mean, think about it. They were like 20 points ahead of everyone else in the American League for team batting average going into game.
It's the first time they've been no-hit since 93.
Yeah.
You know who no-hit him last time?
Chris Bosio.
Of my Seattle Mariners.
Yes.
That's right. April 25th, 1993.
All 300 pounds of him.
He was not that big. He's now the pitching coach. Now he's big. I think he's the pitching coach for the Brewers.
He's a big boy.
If I'm not mistaken.
Wait. Did I get the stat right? The last time the Red Sox were no-hit, Alex Cora played on that team that was – being that no hit the Red Sox?
No, Joey Cora would have been on the Mariners at that point. Potentially. I didn't remember Joey Cora there in 93.
I could be wrong. I thought I heard something.
I think Joey Cora got there in 95.
But just so unlikely. I mean, he put down $1,000 in Vegas that the Sox are going to get no hit by Oakland on a Saturday night.
You can bet on no hitters out there. You certainly can.
And not that I care at all about this because I hate fantasy guy, but I didn't pitch Sean Manet in fantasy that day because I thought he was going to get rocked.
It was the first thing he texted me.
He said he had a no hitter for two innings because he thought that one of them was ruled the base.
Well, I believe that because I was always acutely aware whenever I had a no hitter, whether it was through one inning or seven innings. The longest I ever had a no hitter, I think, was through 5 2/3. I think so.
Did you win the game at least?
We did.
Okay.
And I don't think I ended up with a shutout even in that game. But nonetheless, I think I had one through 5 2/3, or maybe it was even 4 2/3. It wasn't long.
There's something just so cool. I mean, I remember sitting at Fenway, and by the time it got to the fifth inning, even if it was the other team, I was like, come on. I want to see this. This is exciting.
But I remember, I knew when I had a no-hitter, but in his case, I believe he didn't quite know because you've pitched from the stretch before. You know, he walked the leadoff guy in that game.
Yes.
He's pitched, he's seen the ball over Semien's head or whatever the blooper was, the Benintendi play. He's pitched out of the stretch multiple times. I believe he didn't know he had one.
All right. What did you think about Price now, who was, 1-1 going? Are we just going to move it up to the eighth inning here, I guess?
I'd move
it's
up 1-1 to the
bottom
eighth.
Of the eighth. Yeah.
Look, I think, did Cora make the mistake in leaving him in? The answer is yes.
Absolutely. Hindsight being 20-20, but now was it – forget the fact that we're going to be ripe as we know the outcome. He should never even have started the eighth inning. I don't care how well you're pitching. Not in April, you don't let somebody go 8 or 9 innings.
He was only in like the upper 70s I know in his pitch count.
I know that, though, but it's not only the pitch count. It's what, the fourth time around or whatever it is coming up, which is another thing, too. It's on the road. And three, it is April. There's just no reason for it. At least I didn't think so. I mean,
that was one of those situations where I looked at it when he came out for the eighth, and my first thought was, wow, that's a surprise. Yeah. Although he's been pitching well. And then he gives up the home run, and I'm screaming at my television. What is Cora thinking? You know, only once the game got out of control with one swing of the bat did I get angry.
I'm okay with Price starting the inning because of his pitch count. I'm okay with him starting the inning because of how well he's thrown this year. He only threw the one inning against the Yankees two starts ago, so he hasn't thrown as many innings as you could have thrown. By this point in the year, the right move was to bring in Carson Smith. You had got a righty in Chris Davis at the plate.
Although
Davis's career numbers are far worse against lefties than righties, and especially more recently. He had .213 against lefties last year. So he has struggled against lefties. But nonetheless, I still would have gone to the righty in Carson Smith. But that said, Arnie, I'm shocked you say that because you're like, oh, it's April. You're the one who wanted Kimbrel coming in for two innings on day one with no spring training just because you wanted to get the win so bad.
And you know what? The fourth thing is also the score was tied. So you got to anticipate, you know what? He's not going to get the decision in this. What am I going to drag him out there for? for a couple more innings for really no reason whatsoever. He got us this far. We got to go to our bullpen. And you're on the road also. I'm not leaving my starting pitcher out there. No, I don't think that was – and again, I'm not saying it because we know the final score now. Again, those are the four reasons why you probably pull the pitcher. If you're thinking about it right now, you're like, okay, we're on the road. It's tied. It's April. This guy, you know, he's pitching good. We don't want anything to get mentally any problems here. No, there was a lot of reasons why to pull him and get the bullpen in there, especially when things are going pretty good. When your record is 17-3 at the time, why keep him in there? I mean, there was no reason to keep him in there.
The thing that really surprised me, like I said, I was a little surprised he came out, but I was fine with it because David Price was pitching well, as he has all season other than that first inning against the Yankees at Fenway. But once he gave up two base runners, was it a single and a walk? I'm trying to remember what it was. But once those two guys got on base – it's like, all right, come on, righty on righty, play the percentages here. Get him out of there.
Well, he struck out Lowry, who they had hitting right-handed. The other thing, Arnie, I'm just shocked about is this. Yep. Again, I think that the right move was to bring in Carson Smith, but for Enrich, you basically said against the Yankees, oh, there's Price pulling himself with a fake injury because he was struggling.
Yep.
So now you're calling out the guy's toughness. And now we're getting on him because he does, you know, because he wanted the ball longer than you thought. You can't have it both ways. You guys get on him and say he needs to toughen up, Buttercup, and then here he is. He wants the ball in the eighth inning, and he wants to be the guy. And you're on him for that too.
I'm glad he wanted the ball. I want to see that moxie out of him. I'm just not going to give him the ball.
I was just sort of suggesting the possibility of that being some problem.
The right move was to bring in Carson Smith. I get why he did it though. Price had pitched well, under 100 pitches. Davis hasn't hit well against lefties. He had just struck out Lowry, so maybe there was more left in the tank. I still would have gone with Carson.
Rich, very excited about our next guest. Brady, tell everybody who it's going to be.
Bob Soucy, the voice of the Patriots, the new voice of the Patriots. We'll talk to him. Draft week is here, and we'll talk about the former voice of the Patriots, Gil Santos, who passed away.
Coming up next right here on
The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady. It's really sort of an addiction. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Guys, I want to go right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, very excited to talk to the radio play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. It's Bob Soucy. How you doing, Bob? Bob.
Bob, can you hear us?
Oh, Bob.
I lost you momentarily.
Oh, there you go. Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Hey, I'm doing well. Can you hear me?
You're breaking up a little bit.
Okay.
There you go. Perfect. There you go. That's perfect.
We found you.
There you go.
It's a good thing you're not doing that way. As the kick is being lined up to win a Patriots game with 4 seconds left on the clock. Bob, I can't believe all the stuff that is. I mean, Brady was going down this list of all the things that you guys have in common. You've lived like parallel lives. So I go to your Wikipedia page. It says residence, Milton, Mass. That's the town I grew up in. So on and on it goes.
Yeah, small world indeed, for sure.
So, Bob, first of all, obviously we carry the games here on the station, and you're the voice of the Pats, and you took over for Gil Santos. What were your thoughts upon his passing last week?
Well, naturally, a great deal of sadness and reverence, as I've always had for Gil. Growing up in Central New York, as you guys alluded to, you know, we didn't hear a lot of Gil Santos when I was a kid. In particular, even with NFL films using the local radio call, at that point in time in my childhood, the Patriots were good at times, but certainly, nothing remotely close to the kind of team they have been for the last 17, 18 years. So there was a little bit of familiarity with Gil Santos just because I was a broadcasting nerd and dreamt of getting into the business a long, long time ago. But then in the early 2000s, in the midst of the Patriots dynasty, I had a chance to go to Gillette for an AFC Championship game. It was the Ty Law game against Peyton Manning and the Colts in the snow. And listened on my mini Walkman, the old Sony yellow mini Walkman, listened to Gil Santos while standing in the Colts section. I got a ticket from a friend of mine who was a college classmate of Colts tight end Marcus Pollard. And I was riveted. And from that time on, it became as big a Gil Santos fan, I think, as anybody could be in our business, I would purchase the Three Games to Glory DVDs and listen to Gil's radio calls and all the NFL film specials while prepping for Navy games. I moved to Milton with my wife in 2007, and Gil was on the radio in the mornings at WBZ on the AM dial, and then, of course, calling Patriots games on 98.5, the Sports Hub, our flagship. And you know, when I reached out to Gil about that time, calling Navy football, and asked him if he would be willing to critique one of my football CDs, he was more than willing and more than gracious. And he had some things to nitpick for sure, but he also had many kind things to say. And, you know, that gave me a lot of confidence that, you know, maybe I might have a place in an NFL booth someday. And little bit, you know, any of us know that, you know, the next year, 95, the Sports Hub launched. Gil pointed me in the direction of somebody who could help me at least get a contact name. At 98.5, the Sports Hub, went in and met with the program director, Mike Thomas, left him a CD, and then a few years later, when Gil announced his retirement, you know, they remembered that CD at 98.5, the Sports Hub, and I was considered as a candidate for the position.
Wow.
But by no means, you know, once being offered that spot, and every day since, have I ever really considered myself the true voice of the Patriots. That will always be Gil. And so to go back to your question, in the days after I first learned of the news, the minutes after I first learned of the news late Thursday night, and I was out of the country at the time, you know, my immediate thoughts were, he is the eternal voice of the Patriots. He's a Hall of Famer. He's not in the broadcasting league of the Patriots Hall of Fame. He's in the Patriots Hall of Fame along with all the great players. And this is a man that, you know, was legendary in our business, welcomed into homes and cars across New England, but also had a profound impact on people in the business, like myself, like others that he worked with at WBZ through the years, at Penn State, the voice of the Nittany Lions, Steve Jones, and I have talked about Gil's impact on his career. So a lot of sadness and yet, at the same time, gratitude and an understanding that, you know, as we celebrate the career and the impact that Gil had on all of us who were his fans, you know, there's an understanding that, you know, he's always going to be the voice of autumn in New England.
Mm. Bob, what can a great broadcaster mean to an organization and to a fan base?
Well, when you think about Gil and his legacy, I know so many point to the iconic calls. The perfect call of Adam Vinatieri's game-winning field goal in Super Bowl 36, and I think you could throw the game-tying kick in the Snow Bowl against the Raiders that year in that class as well, and so many other great moments, of course, during this dynastic run for the Pats. But to me, the true meaning of a broadcaster's impact when he develops a relationship with the listener is understood in the lean times. And when you think about the Patriots' history and how they were a laughing stock in the National Football League back in the early 70s. Gil's first days at the microphone as the play-by-play man for the Pats, like 1971, they won six games, and Jim Plunkett was a rookie quarterback, and of course he took a pounding in those early days, and the Patriots went through a number of coaches, and then in later years, it was a revolving door of people in and out of Foxborough, and they had great teams under Chet Fairbanks, but for a very brief time, and so for a good portion of his 36 years of calling Patriots games, the teams weren't especially competitive.
Yeah.
But Gil and later Gino Cappelletti, they developed the relationship between fans and the team. They were the companions who went along for the ride, and especially during those days when Patriots games were blacked out. You couldn't watch them on TV, so you listened to them on the radio. And a generation here that, you know, may not have grown up in a football-rich area at the time, they understood, they learned football through the words and the eyes of Gil Santos and Gino Cappelletti.
You know, Bob, take me back to February 2017. You're calling the Super Bowl. Patriots are down 28-3. You're thinking to yourself at that point, what's going through your mind? Like, what are we going to wrap up this game and get an early dinner? What's going through your mind at that point?
Honestly, we were stunned. You know, it was not a very enjoyable halftime show, I'll say that. Nothing against Lady Gaga. Bill and I, I think, you know, we're definitely in shock. Patriots come out in the second half, and you think, okay, at that time, let's make this interesting. You know, hopefully they get back in this game, and at least it's a close finish, and who knows what happens. And they come out, and they get a little momentum. They get a 3-and-out in the first possession for the Falcons, and then get a great punt return by Julian Edelman into Atlanta territory, and you think, okay, here they go. But then They do nothing with that possession, and Atlanta goes down, and you know the Falcons, you know, are in a position where you think, okay, now they're going to salt the game away.
Yeah.
And as that comeback unfolded, honestly, it almost became out of body. Like you're just trying to keep up with what's going on, maintain an awareness of the clock and the situation, you know, how many possessions you think are left. Try to stick with the story the game is telling you, and tell that story to the listener. And you know, you just want to, honestly, my motivation always in any game, but especially those big games, don't screw it up. So you just want to call the places that, you know, they're happening and let Zoe do his thing. And then now as the game starts to get closer and there's a sense, okay, the tide might be turning, then you start to speculate, okay, you know, here's what they need to do on this position. Here's what we can expect, you know, when the Falcons get the ball back, how the Patriots going to use the timeouts, et cetera. The interesting thing about that comeback, Bill, is it really wasn't a linear rally in that, you know, once they got momentum, you could tell they were going to roll across the finish line, because it was kind of a step forward and a half step back, two steps forward and a step back. And so, you know, that particular comeback, it was more of a case of just call what's happening, try not to screw it up, and you know, eventually, you know, history was made.
Bob, let's move to the team as is and what will be, obviously, mercifully, in my opinion, it's draft week. What do you make of the Pats having those two first and two second-round picks? What do you think they'll do?
Well, I think they have a lot of options, obviously, and they have a lot of capital, and they need it. This is a team that, as good as the Patriots have been, having gone to three of the last four Super Bowls, really haven't gotten much out of the draft when you look at their roster in recent years in the top rounds. Now, they hit on a first-round pick, I believe, in Malcolm Brown a couple of years ago. Naturally, Dante Hightower has had a huge impact on the Pats. Devin McCourty, those are first-round picks. But starting in 2003, when they traded out of the first round, and then in 2013, when they traded out of the first round with Minnesota, and then in 2014, when they selected Dominic Easley, and then you think about 2016 and 17 with no first-round picks, those are opportunities, or at least if they weren't missed opportunities, they were opportunities taken away from them to really replenish the roster and bring in high-end talent. And now you're looking at the Pats with some serious issues to address. Left tackle, I think a guy who can play off the line as a linebacker, perhaps on the defensive front as a pass rusher, the back end of the defense, you know, a tight end. For example, who can take over for Gronk in the most important position of all in football, the quarterback spot. So they've got a lot of areas to address looking ahead. And I'm not thinking about 2018 necessarily. I'm thinking about 2020, 2021, to keep what's been so great going in the right direction. And I think this is a great opportunity for them to replenish the roster with some high-end athleticism and talent. And they're certainly in a position where I think they could get impact players, especially at number 23, but also have the capital. If they want to move up and get a guy, not necessarily to the top four or five or quarterback, but maybe to the top 15 to get an impact player on either side of the ball, you know, they're in a great spot to do that.
Bob Soucy, voice of the Patriots, now play-by-play man with us on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. What do you make of the off-season turbulence and the noise around this team, whether it's Tom Brady, Gronk, or other? What do you make of it?
Yeah, I think it's disconcerting, to put it mildly. And, you know, I know that there's always drama surrounding the Patriots, and naturally in this day and age, especially in this marketplace, you know, sometimes the drama is manufactured. I think in this case, there's reason to be a bit concerned about the situation, especially, you know, in the case of Gronk and after the weekend press conference that he had down at Gillette Stadium. And I'm somebody who believes that Gronkowski is underpaid relative to other tight ends. Now you see the contracts that are being handed out to guys who aren't even nearly in his caliber, wide receivers that, you know, don't have the impact on a game as Gronkowski, who arguably is the greatest tight end, I think, in modern football. Tom Brady, of course, in his situation, you know, you want to hear from these guys, and we heard from Gronk on Saturday, but I didn't think we heard the right things at Gillette Stadium just a few steps away from where his teammates were last week, working out in the offseason conditioning program. I think the way the Super Bowl ended, of course, and the situation involving Malcolm Butler and the mystery and the potential impact on, you know, the way some guys think about, you know, how things were handled, you know, that's something that, you know, is been talked about, has been talked about and written about a great deal. And again, I don't think it's something that, you know, has been necessarily manufactured, but, you know, it's something that I think has been on all of our minds. I still believe that when the Patriots reconvene on the football field and start practicing, especially the mandatory camp, when Brady and Gronkowski, we presume, are going to be there, and Bill Belichick gets out there and starts coaching, and they start focusing on the coming season, things will be okay. But there certainly appears to be a lot of work to be done. I think perhaps whether it's to mend fences, to come to some contractual agreements with guys, or to just simply sort things out man-to-man between the principals.
Well, personally, I mean, you look back, and it, clearly baseball was your thing, playing for the New York State Championship team in Auburn. And you know, I've been there a few times doing play-by-play in that tiny little broadcast booth at Falcon Field. But I look back, and it's very much like that in your career. Delmarva, the Frederick Keys, the world-famous Albuquerque Isotopes.
Yeah.
I mean, I look back on this, and do you sit there today and go, damn, this really worked out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny because I always thought baseball would be the path for me to the big leagues. And I'm so grateful that it wasn't. And it's funny, I met my wife, who's a Boston area native, while I was calling Norfolk Tides games and doing Navy football, Navy basketball,
oh, wow,
and Patriot League basketball. And, you know, we got engaged, and she had an opportunity to really take a dream job for her in the Boston area. And at that point in time, I said, you know what? Things aren't working out the way I thought they might with baseball. I had been knocking on doors and had a couple of opportunities to be considered for major league jobs, but nothing had come to fruition. And I thought, you know, I'd love to live and work in Boston or New York. Those are the two cities I've always wanted to be in, and let's do it. I can base myself in New England and knock on some doors there while doing, you know, what I've been doing in the Mid-Atlantic, as long as everybody's agreeable to it. And Navy was gracious enough to allow me to do that. They thought highly enough of my football play-by-play and the role that I had with them that they allowed me to live in New England and then commute on the weekends for the games, which I did for 5 years. And in the meantime, as I noted earlier, you know, knocked down the door at 98.5 Sports Hub, and then after Gil's retirement, I was, you know, lucky enough to be considered, let alone to be offered that position. And I'm thankful for it. I'm grateful for it every day, every minute, every mile of that minor league journey. You touched on some of the cities I worked in. I was in Peoria, Illinois, Frederick, Maryland.
Wow.
I've taken bus rides from Charleston, West Virginia, to Charleston, South Carolina. I've called games in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and Clinton, Iowa. And as I said, you know, I couldn't be happier. I'm so glad it worked out the way it did. The quality of life that being an NFL broadcaster affords you, especially relative to your family responsibilities, is something I really treasure about what I do. Baseball's a grind. It's every day. A lot of long days. You really never have any, as you know. I mean, you're at the ballpark even for home games all afternoon and evening. And so when I look back on it, I'm grateful today that it didn't work out as I thought it might in baseball, and did work out in football, at least for now.
Well, Bob, we certainly appreciate your time. It'd be great. You know, Rich, you should go down and see Bob, maybe call a little preseason Patriot game, yeah, or something. Would that be great, Bob?
So, that's it. No, I'll stick with the Auburn double days against the Batavia Muck Dogs on some rainy Tuesday night.
Well, if I recall correctly, Falcon Park in Auburn was generally considered as probably the worst minor league ballpark in the country before it was renovated a number of years ago. And Burlington had, if not still has, the oldest ballpark in the minor leagues. Is that correct?
I don't know that it's the oldest in the minor leagues, but it is over 100 years old at Centennial Field.
And they're still using it.
I remember because I was calling games in the South Atlantic League. And in Greensboro, North Carolina, you know, they laid claim to having the oldest ballpark. It might have been the worst at that time. But I remember some guys who wound up playing for the Delmarva Shorebirds, who had started their careers with Vermont and the Expos organization.
Oh, how funny.
And hearing wonderful things about playing in Burlington. I love Burlington. My wife went to medical school at UVM.
Wow.
So it's a great place. And, you know, it's a long ride for a 6 and a 7-year-old, which is why we don't get up there as much during the summer as we'd like to. But love that area. Would love to have you guys stop by the booth if you ever get down to Foxborough.
Oh, you bet. And if you're ever up here in Burlington, let us know. Lunch is on Rich, so we'll all go out.
In this case, yes, it is. Yes.
You may live to regret those words.
I love it. Hey, Bob, thanks so much for your time. Have fun, and we can't wait to hear you call Patriot games when the season starts.
Guys, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Bob Soucy, everybody. Oh, that was a lot of fun. Rich, you.
All right, there's a connection.
Are you going to pass out now?
I am. I'm going to replace Zoe.
You have just. You're going to go outside and smoke a cigarette. We'll come back. We got to wrap up the hour right here on 101.3.
The Huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN.
I think you're gushing. I think you're just gushing right now. Look at you.
Whenever we have play-by-play guys on this show, that's when I'm taking a deep breath. Let's do this.
If you don't go down there and see him, I'm serious. I don't know who does the play-by-play is done. Excuse me. The preseason play-by-play is done by somebody other than the regular broadcasters. Well,
on TV.
On TV it is.
Yes. I know Tim Brando.
I don't think so on the radio. Yeah.
No, it's always Bob on the radio, Bob and Zoe.
So no matter what.
We just don't carry all of the preseason games.
Ah. All right.
But well, in case Zoe gets thrown out of the press box, which is always entirely possible.
Would you get sick?
I would be happy to fill in, yes.
Would you get sick if you had to call a preseason Patriot game?
I would pass out.
I think you would. How great would that be, though?
Brady
back
goes
the pass.
Back to pass.
His leg. It's hanging. What happened?
It is hanging.
Well, I think we could take Bob. So far, we've got lunch planned with Bob Soucy and Stu Gotts whenever he comes up to go golfing.
But Bob may actually come up. It's not what his wife would graduate UVM Medical School.
Yeah.
Wow.
Smart person.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Not bad. So I'm sure he makes it up here. You got to make it down there.
Now let's see if we can charm Dale Murphy into a free meal.
Oh, that's going to be fun. By the way, I would go down there right now after the show. I go, hey, Bob, you said come down anytime.
So Trust me, if Bob's downtown, I'm downtown too.
Is he, and I'm sorry for this ignorant question, is he very popular? Because, you know, is when you talk about team play-by-play guys, you know, we talked about like the Vince Scullys. Vince Scully was like his, you know, or Chick Hearn.
Yeah.
They were like their own, you know, breathing, living icons.
Right,
you know?
But were they with the fan base after 3 years?
I couldn't tell you that.
I think Soucy's only been here.
Two years? I think it's three. I thought it started in 2013, which would make 4 years, but I'll have to check
that. Would
on
make
that.
13, 14, 15, 16, 17. That would make 5 years.
Yeah, it might be. It's been a while.
I don't know if that many, that little time, but you know those, you know how I'm talking about play-by-play guys are like iconic.
Yeah, like Gil Santos. I mean, he lasted 30-whatever years, and he got more and more famous. He was the voice of a generation for a lot of Pats fans.
Gordon and Moncton said, could you imagine Arnie and Zolak on together?
That is pretty funny.
You like that one, huh? You like that, huh? All right, hour one in the books. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. Brady, tell everybody who's coming up after the update.
Dale Murphy played 18 years in the majors.
18 years?
You know him most notably with the Atlanta Braves. Yeah. He was a two-time National League MVP. He won the Gold Glove 5 years in a row.
Sweet.
He'll join us next.
That's coming up next right here.
To the Huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good evening, everyone. You're in the Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Dale Murphy, minutes away. Rich, wow. I know you're still excited about Bob Soucy.
Dale Murphy, man. Yeah, this is a big show.
It is. It is Dale Murphy.
Wow, we've hit the big time.
You like Dale,
Oh, my gosh. Growing up watching him on TBS, that was like the first national team.
Give me some more names on that. Bob Horner, which was the third baseman on that team.
Remember Bob Horner with the big bushy
was
hair?
Was that the... I forget who was the pitcher that I remember. I think he was a reliever. I think it began with an E, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
I can't remember. Yeah, but I remember. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the Braves, they kept calling them America's team because they were the first team that had a network carrying all of their games. I mean, nowadays, everybody carries all of their own games.
Exactly.
But I think it was Ted Turner Sports carrying Braves games when we were kids. And Dale Murphy, Bob Horner, guys like that. And they were awful. most of the time. And then Glavin and Maddox and Smoltz came along, and that changed things in a hurry.
Now let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, and check out this. You're not going to believe it. He's won a Silver Sluggers Award 4 straight years. National League Gold Glove winner 5 straight years. It's Dale Murphy. How you doing, Dale?
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You should be yelling at me because I didn't even mention the MVP award, for crying out loud.
That's okay. I'll forgive you. Thank you.
Well, Dale, the first thing I want to know, MVP, Silver Sluggers 4 straight years, Golden Glove 5. Look, I don't want to start off like this, but why are you not in the Hall of Fame, for crying out loud?
First time he's asked that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. You know, it's interesting that you asked that. The Hall of Fame has changed things with the Veterans Committee. We now have the ERA committees, and I got to say that we put in two guys from the 80s, Jack Morris and Alan Trammell, and I was on that ballot, and I'll be eligible in a couple more years. So, you know, I've got a lot of people that have been very supportive, and now I have a different opportunity. They've changed the way it's voted on, and guys from the 70s and 80s that they...
Oh, damn.
Oh.
So I still got a chance.
Yeah.
Good.
Hey, my favorite stat is from 1985, though. I can't imagine anyone's ever done this except you. You led the league in walks and strikeouts. How does that happen?
I don't know, because I didn't walk that much. I know that was a hard one to figure out. I was kind of a streaky hitter. You know, I'd have some really good streaks and then some really ugly streaks, and that's probably one of those years where I'd go along for 2 weeks.
Oh, he's cut. Yeah,
that's different.
You know, we'll call Dale back. We'll try to get him back.
Get Dale on hold for a second. And get him back, because I want to hear about that also.
It's funny. He says he didn't walk. He walked 986 times.
Yeah,
that's a lot of walks.
Well, he's played a long time also. He played
for 18
seasons.
Yeah,
so,
most of them with the Braves.
My goodness. By the way, Big Mike, Big Mike says, as a youngster watching the Phillies, Murph was arguably the best in the game when he played. And that's coming from a Mike Schmidt fan. So great job.
Oh, I mean, in 82, 83, there's two MVP years. His stats are unbelievable. He was a guy that never took a day off. Can you imagine? He played 4 consecutive years of 162 games.
Wow.
That just never, ever happens anymore.
Judge led in walks and strikeouts last year, by the way.
He did? Yeah, I guess he did.
Then we got him back. Brady, say hello to Dale
Murphy.
I think
so. Dale Murphy is still with us.
Yeah, that's better.
All right, perfect. Dale, we were just talking about this. We were talking about a text we got from somebody who said, I was a big Mike Schmidt fan, but watching Dale Murphy was always a treat. Who were some of the names that you enjoyed playing against or with back in the 80s?
Well, I think definitely Schmidt would be one of the guys that I would say come at the top of the list, because we were both kind of tall guys for our era, and I always admired him. He actually cut down his... He started out with a lot of strikeouts, and then he cut them down, really, as his career went on, and I always admired him about that. He was a little bit more of a thinker and a little bit more of a cerebral hitter than I was, but we always would kind of talk hitting a little bit if we were on the same all-star team. And I got to share a Mike Schmidt story that I don't really get a chance to share very often. He retired in 89, and I got traded to the Phillies in 90, and I was doing okay, but I was kind of struggling. And one off season, I get a package in the mail, and it's a videotape of Mike at his home giving me some hitting tips. It was the nicest thing. He said, Murph, you know, I don't know if this is going to work for you, but it worked for me. And he talked about where he held his hands and some of the things he would think about while he's up there. And I thought that was one of the nicest things. And I actually have that tape. I ran across it the other day, but I've always loved, playing against Mike. And the other name that obviously I got to say is Pete Rose, and the Big Red Machine, for that matter. That was a thrill to play against all those guys.
Dale Murphy with us here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Two-time National League MVP, 18-year Major League veteran. Dale, we were talking about this too. 740 straight games you played in at one point, four consecutive years of playing a full 162.
Wow.
How did you prepare back then? We always hear now about recovery and all that stuff. How did you do it then? Because you were an Iron Man before Cal Ripken was an Iron Man.
Well, I think that streak kind of happened as a result of two things. I was playing well and I didn't get hurt. I was, one of the things that back then, you know, I don't want to sound like an old guy scolding these young kids, but you know, a lot of them slide head first. I don't know, but it's a safer slide, to slide feet first. And so, tried to do things fundamentally, and that'll cut down on your injuries.
Right.
I tried to stay in great shape, during the off season, because I figured if I did get hurt, I'd be on the DL a little bit of a shorter time. So I tried to, play aggressively, but not crazy. You know, I didn't shy away from diving for a ball, or didn't shy away from, running into the fence. But, you know, I tried to stay in control and realize that, you don't want to play crazy. You're going to help your team the more often you're out there, obviously. And so really not being hurt and being on a pretty good roll is what led to that streak. I have no idea how Cal did it. going for over 700 games was hard enough for me. And finally, actually, I'll tell you, I was in Philly one day and I had to walk into Chuck's office. Chuck Tanner was our manager.
Yeah.
Chuck, I can't do this anymore. I feel like I'm hurting the club. I need a day off. I was in a pretty good slump, and he said, okay, let's do it. And so it was kind of an emotional day.
Dale Murphy joining us on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Dale has eight kids. Dale, two of your kids played in the NFL. Another one may get drafted in the upcoming draft. Does it bother you that they got into the NFL and not baseball? How come they didn't follow in your footsteps? And two, are you never worried about the whole concussion thing that's going on? You tell me.
Oh, yeah. I ended up with some big kids that like football. We gave them a chance to play everything. And I think, there's a lot more information, that we know about now concerning when my kids started playing. We'll have to see what my grandkids, decisions are. But we definitely understand that, and it's a big concern for me, no question about it. And my boys know, they understand it, and it's a real concern. I'm happy to see football make some changes, and I think we can need to continue to go that direction. But yeah, Sean and then Jake have played, and now my son McKay from Weber State University is going to get a shot.
Wow,
Dale, back to baseball. How do you like that? Do you like where baseball's gone in terms of style of play, as far as rule changes, the pace of play controversy, that sort of thing?
I'm being from the National League, and I don't like the DH. I'm probably a little more progressive as far as baseball is concerned and rule changes. I'm in favor of adapting and changing a little bit quicker. As much as I am against the DH, I think eventually it's going to go to the National League. I mean, when you think about it, the National League is the only league on the earth, around the world, that doesn't have a DH, and I think it's weird that we're still playing different rules. And I am concerned about length of game and pace of play. We need to appeal to a younger demographic. We need more eyeballs, more often, on TV watching the game, and continually grow our fan base. I think baseball's got tremendous things going on. These young players, baseball's never had a situation where the best players are this young. It's remarkable, and they're fantastic athletes. So I'm not afraid to try some things. Some of the suggestions I've heard I don't like, but I'm not afraid of a pitch clock, limiting trips to the mound. We got one big problem that I don't know how we're going to solve, is there's just not as many complete games. The game really slows down about the sixth inning when we start making changes to the bullpen. Our pitching staffs are going 12, 13 deep. I don't know how we're going to fix that, but I'm open to looking at a lot of things to pick up the pace of the game.
Dale, what do you make of the unwritten rules? We had a big brawl between the Red Sox and Yankees 2 weeks ago over a mild cleats up slide. Yeah. What do you make of the unwritten rules? And were you ever involved in a great brouhaha?
Yeah.
Wow, was I ever involved in a group? Well, I'll just tell you this, and a lot of Braves fans from the 80s will remember this. Just Google Braves Padres 1984 brawl. We still are ranked as maybe number one, or we're at least in the top five of all time fights. It lasted literally the whole game, about every other inning. And so, yeah, there's some unwritten rules. I saw that slide. I understand the concern. I've seen a lot worse. But I understand you got to be careful, with your spikes and how high they go. I didn't think he really got him that good, but I understand. Mostly the game will police itself and guys will behave. I don't really have a problem, even being an old timer, with some of the antics as far as guys hitting home runs and celebrating and stuff. I think they're having a blast. I think in the old days we were too bland.
Yeah.
Young kids love some of this stuff now, and as long as you do want to be a good sport. I think we want to teach people to respect the other team and the opposition and be a good sport. I don't think that's good, but I really don't think a lot of these guys are trying to show up other players. I think they're trying to show their personality. You know, Bryce Harper is saying, we got to have some fun out there, and I agree with that. But, yeah, there's some good unwritten rules that kind of keep things in check.
Did you like playing up in Montreal against the Expos? How about going up there? We're not too far away from there.
Oh, yeah, I loved going to Montreal. I think everybody would agree the stadium was a little different. The Big O and Olympic Stadium, trying to retrofit that into a baseball field. I didn't like hitting there. I don't think anybody liked hitting there. And when I was playing, that team was amazing. Wow. You know, we were always playing against Steve Rogers and Warren Cromartie and Andre Dawson and Gary Carter. It was just a remarkable team and great fans. And I know there's a lot of rumors about getting back up in that area, and I think it'd be great. I'll just tell you one quick thing about the possibilities. I've been in touch with the people in Portland, Oregon, about the chances of them getting a team. And they're not even talking about building a stadium that holds 35,000. They're talking about one that holds 30,000, expandable to 34. So I guess when you look at going back to Montreal, you don't have to build Olympic Stadium again. You build a good-sized stadium, and you could fill it every night. You know, the whole system has changed now. You don't need huge stadiums. You just need good, efficient stadiums with good mixed-use stuff around it like the Braves did. And, it opens up a lot of possibilities.
Dale, thank you for suggesting that video. I forgot about that one. I'm 57, so I remember that. I mean, you got Pascual Perez running around with a bat.
Pascual Perez, that's right.
I'm sure you have some stories, most of which can't get on this show, but I mean, I'm watching it. Lefferts and Goose Gossage. You got fans being let off in handcuffs. You got players with their shirts torn off. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll just add one more little tidbit. If you keep watching, you'll see Bob Horner at the top of our dugout stairs. He's in a cast. He was up and doing color for the radio or TV, but Champ Summers wanted to come down into our dugout and find Pascual Perez, and finally Bob put on a jersey, and you'll see him standing at the top of the dugout protecting Pascual from Champ Summers. I'll tell you, it was a crazy, crazy day, and I probably get asked at least once a week on Twitter about it.
Dale, we'll get you out of here on this question. You mentioned Pete Rose earlier. What's your stance on Pete Rose and his ban from baseball, and what's your stance on guys who are found to be cheating the game and using steroids?
Yeah.
Well, the Hall of Fame has obviously made their statement, and I'm a little bit leery of lifetime bans. I think Pete has paid a hefty price. I think if you gamble on the game, your career should end. And I'm fine with a 25, 30-year ban, but a lifetime ban, I don't know. So I've said publicly that I wouldn't mind looking at Pete's case and getting a chance at reinstatement. I think he has paid a hefty price. And for most guys, a 30-year ban, your career's over, we'd never hear of you again.
Yeah.
And it has to have some teeth. As far as steroids is concerned, I got a real tough problem with voting for guys that have, you know, obviously used them. And but it seems, you know, it does seem to be easing a little bit. But, you know, we still have our best pitcher and our best hitter in the history of the game not in. So people have been pretty strong about it.
You know, Dale, one of our listeners just texted in, says he has a 1989 Upper Deck card of Dale Murphy that was printed wrong, and it makes you look like a left-handed batter.
That's right. The reverse negative. I don't see very many of them, but every once in a while.
Well, he's got one.
I love it. I love it. Hey, Dale, thank you so very much, man. We got to do it again. Good luck to your son being in the draft, and thanks a lot for stopping by.
Well, thank you. And I know we had a lot of fans in TBS back in the day up in Vermont. Yeah. And so I really appreciate the chance to be on with you guys anytime.
Thanks a lot. Dale Murphy, everybody. How about that? That was a great story about the fight you're watching on your computers.
Oh, my gosh. That was a brouhaha. That included bats being held. And
Pascual Perez. I haven't heard that name in ever.
Oh, what a nut.
Yeah, he was crazy.
That was a great story. The Mike Schmidt sending him batting tips.
Can you imagine finding that? And I'm going, here's Mike Schmidt teaching me how to bat. How great is that?
And I've won two MVPs and four silver sluggers and five gold gloves.
I love this job.
Why is he not in the Hall of Fame?
I have no idea.
Is it,
398 homers.
That's it. I was going to say he had two. If he had 400, is it the too shy? Is it the perception?
500 is the...
I know that, but everybody but one person that has 500 will get on in, right? Dave Kingman doesn't have 500.
No, Bonds is not in.
Well,
Sosa.
Well,
Palmeiro.
That doesn't count because of exterminating... circumstances.
Exterminating.
But I think the person with the most home runs that won't get in, other than the cheaters, is Dave Kingman. I think he has the most.
Ugh. Gary Sheffield has 500 and he's not in. Kingman, he was not proven a cheater.
Kingman also hit about 220.
Well, that's
career,
true. I'm just wondering, because I mean,
Dale Murphy at 265.
That's it, too. 265,
I mean,
not very good,
almost
though.
Almost 1,300 runs.
265, though, that's short. Remember, it's the Hall of Fame, not Hall of Good. You know,
no, I understand.
So... but I feel
I mean, again, people who cheated, I know we're talking different.
Right.
You know, at this point, Bonds is not in. A-Rod is not in.
Right.
Pujols is still playing. He will be in. McGuire is not in. Palmeiro is not in.
How many did Kingman have?
Manny Ramirez is not in.
Again, all the.
I think Gary Sheffield right now is the only one.
Yeah, Sheffield, yeah. Well, Sheffield, I don't think he's going to get in anyway, so you could forget about that. That one's not going to happen, so. We'll see what happens there. Brady, what is coming up on that Champlain Valley game night tonight, by the way?
Short show, 6:30. We go
up to summer hours.
Bruins hockey tonight, continuing winter sports as the Bruins go for a series closeout against the Maple Leafs. We'll talk about the Patriots' connection with Lamar Jackson and just why I'm doubting that makes a lot of sense.
All right, Monday Mirage is coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lakers. The commercials are over and the guys are back. The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
Let's go!
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Remember, trivia tomorrow, 7:30 at the Burger Bar. They'll have the games on. The Red Sox game will be on. Of course, the Celtics-Milwaukee Bucks game, number 5, will be on. So come on by the Burger Bar, 7:30 for trivia.
So who's our next guest, Tom Brady?
Tom Brady coming up next. So get ready for that. You love Dale Murphy.
What a show.
You know what's so funny? My a former producer of mine who got us Dale Murphy's like, anybody else you want, just let me know. I'm like, those are where we're going to start getting all these retired baseball players.
In a year and a half, Arnie has now gotten us
two guests.
Two.
What was the other one I got?
Lincoln Kennedy.
Oh, that's right, Lincoln Kennedy. So I got that one there.
Arnie has gotten us two career guests into history.
I've got to shoot for higher ones there. But Dale was good. Dale was pretty cool.
And your wife just stopped in and announced what you're having for supper.
Yes.
She's cooking you something.
Shrimp or something.
Shrimp and what was the other thing? Sausage. And that's specifically for you because she knew you were going to complain about what she was making.
The E. coli shrimp I'll be having. So that is going to be the.
This is the woman you said had hairy legs live
on
the radio.
She showed us her legs. She doesn't have hair on her legs. Surprising there. I could never see it. I haven't seen it in years. So what would I know?
She is a saint. She is an absolute saint.
I haven't seen it in a year. Yes, that was fun.
That is funny. All right, it is time for Monday Mirages.
Question one.
Yes.
Alex Cora made a mistake leaving David Price in to face Chris Davis on Sunday. Real or mirage?
No, that's real. It's real two ways. One, it's real because it's real. It's true because they lost the game 4-1.
Looking back, it sure is real.
Hindsight's 20/20. But like I said, it's real because of the other reasons. The score's tied. Bottom of the eighth. Get into the bullpen on the road in April. And Price was coming. No, he didn't have a short performance. He had a long performance.
They took him out after like five innings, so right. They were blowing out the Angels.
So, you know, you got into the bullpen then. It is a Sunday, so it is getaway day. All that spelt that you don't know if you were going to win that or was going to go to extra innings anyway. No reason to really keep him in. You're 17-3. Actually, I couldn't even think of one reason to keep him in other than the fact that you probably wanted to get a win, and that's not good enough. No, he made a mistake here.
I agree, and it's easy for us to always say, well, the guy hit a three-run homer. Of course it was a mistake, but I thought it was real well before that pitch was thrown. I was surprised to see him come out for the eighth inning in a 1-1 game with Carson Smith ready to go, and then I was really surprised after he let two runners reach base that he was still in there as a right-hander, a left-hander, I should say, against a right-handed hitter. Who ended up burning him?
I'll say it's real also, but I'm also not mad at him about it. It's real because I think Carson Smith being a righty with a devastating slider when it's on is a better matchup than a lefty who throws a cutter a lot of the time that's going to go right into Davis's wheelhouse. That said, Chris Davis is a worse career hitter against lefties than he is righties. David Price hadn't thrown 100 pitches in that game, and if David Price's biggest knock on him is that he doesn't want the ball in big moments, that he will wimp out and cower in the big moments, then I appreciate the fact that he wanted the ball, and I appreciate the fact that Alex Cora gave him the opportunity to do it. Now, again, I would have gone to Carson Smith because I like his slider more than I like Price's stuff against the left or against the righty. But that said, I like that Alex Cora was giving Price the opportunity because as Price continues this redemption tour, proving his toughness and proving that he wants the ball in tough moments, I think that's important part of the narrative.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with that part of it. I think, Alex, I guarantee you Price is working him big time between innings. He says, just give me a shot. Give me a shot. If I let a guy on base, if I give up a hit or whatever, then you can come yank me. That's the thing that surprised me.
But if it was a home game, I could see him going out for the eighth inning because then, you know, you're at the top of the eighth. You score right in the bottom of the eighth. You bring him the closer. He gets the win. But you're on the road, too. So it's another reason why you don't bring him out.
I just think, Arnie, that you are kind of pot calling the kettle black.
Wow.
You want closers to throw two innings all the time. And you wanted Craig Kimbrell to throw two innings on opening day when he essentially had no spring training. And here you are saying, oh, David Price, who's not even 100 pitches, shouldn't be throwing in that situation.
Right. That's things consistent, though.
No, again, it's not. You want Kimbrell to overwork himself, and here Price is not even overworked.
Well, you didn't have to bring in Kimbrell for two innings. I didn't say it was Kimbrell. You had to bring in for the eighth.
I'm just saying on opening day when they lost, you wanted Kimbrell. Why can't Kimbrell throw the eighth?
But that's staying consistent, though. It's that no pitcher should go past seven in April and get into the bullpen. Whether it's Kimbrell or not, they shouldn't have except if it's Sale. Maybe you want to give him a little leeway, but otherwise I'm not going
to
do that.
Usually you tell me pitchers need to toughen up, Buttercup, and now here's a guy who wants to throw
just a reliever that throws one inning. Yeah, toughen up. Yeah.
Question two. The Patriots are linked to Lamar Jackson in the draft. They would be making a mistake drafting the Louisville quarterback. Real or mirage?
No, I don't think they'd be making a mistake. I just don't want them to trade up to get him. If he falls into their lap with the second first-round pick that they have, or even maybe in the second round. I don't know. I would take him just as long as you don't trade up. I never know how these drafts are going to work. There's always, one, two, three guys that drop and like, oh, my goodness. Yep. If that happens to be Lamar Jackson, you get him in the second round. That's a steal. But I would take one of the first-round picks on him, especially if it's the second first-round pick.
I doubt Jackson's going to be sitting there in the second round especially, but And I wonder if he's going to be sitting there at 23. And do you take a quarterback with your first pick at 23? I think Arizona at 15 is going to have a lot of interest in him. If you can get past Arizona, there's a good chance that we slide to him. But the question is, do you go for a quarterback with that first pick?
I think you need a quarterback. And if you think you can get one there and that's the best guy that you can get, then I have no problem with it. I'm with you, Arnie. I don't have a problem with them taking Lamar Jackson. I do have a problem with them trading up to get any quarterback, right. Really. It doesn't matter who it is. I don't think that taking Lamar Jackson is a mistake, but I think taking him with the expectation that he's going to be ready even within 2 years is a mistake. Now, I think Brady's going to continue to play this year and next year, but if Tom Brady were hurt on the first play of the season, I don't expect Lamar Jackson to come in and save the year.
What obscure – I can't believe I can't remember. What obscure school quarterback is coming out – was it Richmond or something?
Yeah, Richmond. Yes. They love that kid. Yep.
Did you hear about that report that the Patriots are in love with that kid?
Yes.
Yeah, it's getting more and more steam on that. What's the tie-in? I'm sorry, what's the tie-in between Richmond – and there's a tie-in there, is there not? There's a tie-in.
I can't remember.
Yeah, there's a tie-in between the coach or somebody on the staff to the Patriots.
Well, it's what I love about the Patriots situation and why I hope, among other reasons, why they don't trade up and give up all their picks to get one of the top five or six, four or five picks, whatever, is because you've got so many chances here. If you do go after a guy like Lamar Jackson at 23, you still got three more chances in the first two rounds to get a very high-quality guy at a position you immediately need. Offensive line, left tackle, left guard, linebacker, especially, even with Hightower coming back.
Question three, Monday Mirage, is Patriot fans are tired of Gronk's act, real or mirage?
Only tired of Gronk's act right about now. But when the season starts and he's catching touchdowns, there'll be no tired of anybody's act at that point. I'm shocked at the photos he's put out. Last week, what did we say? It was him at the pool or something like that? What was the new one now?
Well, there was the press conference of him at the Monster Energy race
right.
at Gillette.
And there was another one, though. There was another one that he was, I don't know. It's like the best of Gronk summer camp tour or something like that. What a slap in the face to Belichick. No, I don't think the Patriot fans are tired of his act. They love Gronk, so he's an icon.
Look, I love Gronk as long as he doesn't do what he did yesterday. Was it yesterday or was it Saturday? Whatever. It was over the weekend. It was Saturday. He kept calling it a lighthearted sort of news conference with his, you know, as part of his business relationship, I guess he has with Monster Energy.
Right.
And it was at Gillette Stadium. And I just felt like that was crossing the line. I just thought it was very disrespectful for the players that are there working out. I thought it was disrespectful for everybody that works at Gillette Stadium that he chose to show up for something that has nothing to do with football.
It's mirage. Fans aren't tired of Gronk. They don't care about this. Gronk to them is the same oafish figure that he's always been, who just likes to party and have fun. They're not tired of him. It's voluntary workouts. That said, I think Belichick is tired of him. I think Belichick employees and players are offended by this, but fans, as the question was written, I don't think they are tired of Gronk. Question four, the Giants should look to trade offensive lineman Ereck Flowers at the draft, as reports are that they might. Real or mirage?
Wow. Boy, the position I'm not so sure that I want to be trading from. I'm not so sure that's the way I go. And how much are you going to really get from him? You don't get full market value. I don't want to hear about a third-round pick, fourth-round pick.
You'd be lucky to get about a sixth-round
pick. Oh, get out of here. No. No, mirage. You don't trade people like that for sixth-round picks, and you know you keep as many as you can on the roster that have NFL experience. I don't want to hear about sixth-round picks and all that stuff. I'm not good on that.
How about like a third or fourth rounder?
Oh, I'm not even good on the fourth round. The third rounder, now you're starting to pique my interest, but we're not even close on the same thing here.
How many years has Flowers been a Giant?
Three.
Okay,
three
I was
or
say
four.
Two. Isn't it fair to say the word bust now at 3 years?
No, because he's only, what, 23 or 4 years old?
Oof.
And you're not paying him big money now, are you?
He's 23 years old.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to give him a little bit of a raise when his rookie contract comes
I'll
up
say
also.
A little bit.
Well, no. That's why I'm not taking a sixth-round pick.
No, I probably wouldn't take a sixth-rounder either, too. But, I mean, how long are you going to hang on here? How many years are you going to let this go on?
They were 3-13. What difference does it make?
He has played 3 years.
Okay.
Jeez.
When I'll go real.
Bad, yeah.
I mean, the whole thing with Ereck Flowers, this whole thing is... What round are we talking about? I mean, it could be any. I mean, if you get a second rounder for him, hell yeah.
Well, now we're getting crazy. That's not going to happen.
Third, fourth, yeah. I mean, I'd go as high as fourth. I mean, if he's 23, I mean, at what point does the word bust come in?
Two things you can't teach: height and age. I made that up myself. Don't steal that.
I thought it was speed.
Well, I just did that too, but I came up with a variation of my own.
I'm saying it's real. I'd trade this guy. I know he's young. I know there's some potential there still, but he doesn't feel like he's ever going to jive with Dave Gettleman to me. He's got a club option for next year. The Giants, I don't think, are picking up that option because it's $13 million. So he hasn't warranted that kind of money. So you're going to get rid of him after this year anyways. You might as well get some value for him. He skipped out on OTAs on the first day with a new head coach and a new general manager. Doesn't strike me as a guy who's real invested in what you're doing in New York. Go get something for him and then see if he can reinvent himself somewhere else. I'll say absolutely real. Question five here on Monday Mirages on the Huddle, 101.3 ESPN. David Krejci, he is the major key for the Bruins tonight against the Maple Leafs, real or mirage?
He's a big part. Look, he's been a major key up till now, but it shouldn't have to be like that for them to win. They should be able to win even if that guy wasn't playing. I know he's been missing in games they've lost, but still, the Bruins are a better team than the Maple Leafs. They should just be peppering them, which they're doing.
I'll say they are.
Yeah, they are. So, you know, do they need him to step up and win? To win, no. It makes it easier. But they should be able to beat this team if Marchand wasn't playing or any, you know, if you took one guy off the team.
They won without Bergeron.
Yeah, they still should be able to beat this team. So, yeah, it's important, but not to where they win or lose.
So, on the paper, it says is a major key. And well, the way you worded it was the major key.
Well, he's a major key, but they still, yes, that's true. He's a major key, but he still should be able to win without him.
Let's say the major key.
Yeah, that's absolutely a mirage then. I would have put him fourth or fifth. You got to get Bergeron going. You got to get Charlie McAvoy not sucking as much as he did Saturday night. Horrible, yeah. And you can't have Tuukka Rask giving up those ridiculous goals. They just keep getting themselves behind in these games. It cost the Celtics dearly yesterday. It cost the Bruins dearly. They spent the entire rest of the game playing catch-up, and it cost them the game, ultimately.
I'm with you. It's a mirage. It's goaltending and special teams play, I think. Those have been some of the storylines of the series as a whole. I'll continue to say especially that special teams is. But it's amazing what happens when Krejci plays well versus when he doesn't. He was scoreless in Game 3 and 5. They lose both games. He scored goals in the first two games in which they blew out the Maple Leafs. It is interesting to parallel.
By the way, is there any question who should be in goal tonight?
Yeah, I know. No, you know why? Because they yanked him after the fourth goal the other night.
Right.
You can't tell me that's not going to fire
Tuukka.
Also,
the only reason I say you have to start Tuukka in Game 6, because if there's a Game 7, you don't want to have to switch back to Tuukka to Game 7 when you just bench him in a Game 6 and halfway through Game 5.
Yeah, keep in mind, Khudobin got pretty lit up in the second half of the season. He was really good for the last third of the season. But you started seeing fives and sixes on the board against him late in the season. No, I think that it's a perfect scenario for tonight because Tuukka was embarrassed the other night. He is going to come out, as I like to say, with his hair on fire tonight in Toronto, I suspect.
There you got Monday Mirages on this Monday. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Tom Brady, does he deserve a new contract?
Wow, coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and Wingo.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Wow, show just flying by on a Monday. I'm taking off to L.A. on Wednesday.
I love it. You had to sit through 3 months of drizzle and rain.
Yeah, then I leave when it starts getting nice here, huh?
It's like 70 out and
sunny. Would you guys like a UCLA shirt, USC shirt, Clipper, Laker, anything?
Cal State Fullerton.
Cal State Fullerton. That's right, Cal State Fullerton.
I'll take a USC football shirt. Those are some of the best uniforms in
sports. They do have nice. They do.
Especially the red with the yellow. Oh, those are beautiful.
A Sam Darnold t-shirt jersey.
Yes.
Josh Rosen t-shirt jersey.
I'm on all over those.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be bringing those back for us.
All those.
Are you going to bring us anything?
Tank tops. You know, Venice. I was at Venice Beach. No, I'll get you a couple of t-shirts. Yeah, I'll get
from Muscle Beach.
Yeah, from Muscle Beach. When I go down to Muscle Beach, I'm going to go ahead and Facebook it live so you guys can see what I'm down there.
Well, I'm not expecting anything. I didn't bring anything back from Arizona. So.
No. Well, you'll see when I make my rounds all through L.A.
I brought things back from the Super Bowl, so I fully expect something.
Yeah, get him something.
All right, what's going on with Tom Brady? He's coming back. Hurrah, hurrah.
Wow, shocker.
Yeah, wow. Breaking news.
He's coming back, but reports also out that he would like a new contract. Now, people have also said, Mike Garafolo, NFL Network, says that Brady's not at voluntary workouts because of his contract, but that he would like a new contract. He's got 2 more years left on his deal. It's cap-friendly terms for the team. $22 million for the next 2 years are his cap hits. Now, that's a bargain compared to a number of the other top quarterbacks. Do you think he deserves a new contract?
Oh, that's two different questions. Yes, he deserves a new contract. I would have a tough time giving him a contract. I know it's not fair, but it does play into my mind, his wife. And I know maybe that shouldn't, But it does. That's just the way it is. And, you know, overall, his age, I'm not going to give him one. Yes, he does deserve one, and he does deserve more money because he did take the hometown, I guess what you're going to call it, the hometown discount for how many years? But, I mean, look who his wife is. That plays into it.
No, I mean, the guy's got five castles and moats around his home. I mean, how much money does he need? I guess, are we talking about restructuring the $14 million that he's going to make this year and next year? And
I believe he wants more money.
Right, because that's going to hurt the team also.
How much money does he need?
Is he really, you know, when you say reports are, I find it hard to believe that Tom's going to say, give me an extra $3 or $4 million and let's go ahead and make it, it's going to hurt replacing Solder, I'm just giving you a name, on the offensive line or something like that, or it's going to hurt us replacing it running back.
It's an interesting thought because he may start, if all of these rumors that they throw out are true and he's not real happy with the front office, maybe he will take a look at sticking it to them right before he leaves.
This is consistent with what we thought. We heard in Tom versus Time he wants to be appreciated. We've heard reports this offseason that he wants to enjoy coming to work. We've also heard that he wants respect and, well, making way less money than Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, and others, Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins. That isn't respectful to the best quarterback of all time. So this makes sense. I would not give him new money, though. I would not. It makes sense, though.
I'm thinking outside the box. Do we know that he wants more money? And you're probably thinking, well, why the hell would he want a new contract if he doesn't want more money, right? That's probably the number one thing everybody's thinking about. I'm thinking that he wants another contract, and maybe I'm way off base on this, but I think he's trying to beat Belichick to the punch where if they end up cutting him, it will destroy the team in, like, you know, salary cap or something like that. So he wants to make sure that there's no way Belichick could cut him without it really costing the pay. Is that a possibility, or is that completely nuts?
I was with you for a part of that.
Yeah,
I have thought that if Brady's if his cap hit grows higher,
yes,
then he becomes harder to cut.
Exactly, and that way he sticks it to Belichick. Because Belichick, I could see cutting him and embarrassing Brady.
I don't think it's anything about sticking it to Belichick or the organization.
Just covering his ass.
I think it's about providing himself more security.
You think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I just wonder, does he care about his legacy? I mean, is he going to hit the door at the end of his career having, you know, enough money for 5 billion people and saying, I want more? I mean, does that matter to him, what fans think about him after 18 years of taking not nearly as much money as he could have?
I don't think the legacy in terms of – I don't think that's going to affect any fans' perception of him wanting more money. I don't think that matters at all. But his legacy is about winning Super Bowls. If he makes more money, and then as Arnie said – the team can't help other areas get better, and then just say he ends his career with 4 consecutive years of not winning a Super Bowl, and he goes out a loser, whereas he takes less money, and maybe he goes out a winner, and he gets remembered like Jerome Bettis, John Elway, and others that retired as champions.
Here's a good question. What's more likely to happen? Bill Belichick coach another team, or Tom Brady play for another team before their careers are done?
Tom Brady.
Really?
Yes.
I was going to say Belichick for sure because Belichick got a bigger ego and, you know, Brady's got a smaller window. But I would have said
that's a tough question.
And maybe neither, obviously, is probably the answer. But
wow, that's I was amazed you answered that so quickly.
Yeah, I think it is. I think Belichick's more spiteful.
I do too. No, I'll agree with you there. I'm gonna go with Belichick just because.
But he's up there in age, too, so.
He is up there in age, but do you get any indication he's tired of this?
No.
I think Brady, I just think his physical limits are eventually going to catch up to him.
Put it this way. I think if it comes to, I want to, you know, get vengeance, I think it's more Belichick than Brady. Though I think both of them have that type of attitude, honest with you.
I just think physically Brady's going to be done before physically Belichick is done as a coach.
All right. Great last story standing as we finish off this Monday right here on 101.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, remember now, Burger Bar tomorrow, trivia. We will have the games on TV. You'll see the Red Sox game. You'll see, of course, Milwaukee and the Boston Celtics also on TV. Trivia, 7:30. Come on out and have a little fun. And Wednesday, where are you going to be, Brady?
Wednesday, we're going to be over at the UPS store, Carmichael Street in Essex.
Yes.
Nice.
So come on out there also.
And don't forget, Brian in Richmond, our qualifier today for the mistake of the day.
Yes.
So,
forgot about that.
Yeah, he tried to get me on a Celtics-related note from the very first segment of the show. So he qualifies for that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms at Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time.
All right. What do we have for our last story standing, Brady?
Well, how about the Greek freak not able to get served yesterday in a Milwaukee restaurant? Nice. He walked into, I think it was a Mexican restaurant, and they were very busy because of the nice weather and because of the Bucks' win. And so there's Giannis Antetokounmpo standing at the door for 10 minutes, and nobody comes over to him. And then eventually he left, and he went to a pizza place like right next door, and they seated him right away and welcomed him in with open arms.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
But not for that restaurant.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine the abuse they're taking?
They said that they will give him a free meal.
I'll bet.
After game six.
Probably give him a free lot of things.
They'll give him a free meal after game six. His girlfriend had said on social media that it was fine. And they also said that they'll give like a free taco or something if the Bucks win the series.
Oh,
I love that.
I love that. When athletes or actors or actresses get turned out, but you don't know who the hell they are. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
Well, it wasn't that. They ignored him. There just wasn't anybody there.
I did it happen to Beyonce in Vegas. It happened to somebody who was eating a sandwich, and they said, "Sorry, ma'am, no food allowed in." And she says, "Okay, no problem."
Good. I like when that happens.
Yeah, but
bring it down a notch.
But he was nice. He wasn't mean.
No.
He seems like a good guy.
No interns today, huh?
Intern Nathan.
Oh, intern Nathan. Oh. I didn't see
it's his last week.
Oh, gonna
really?
Miss intern Nathan.
Yes, intern Nathan's last week, and then intern Logan and. Then we got a whole new crop of people coming for the summer.
A whole new crop to make fun of. So that's I'm excited about that.
To go get Arnie's water.
For Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.